Hello, and welcome to the OTP, the one true podcast for fanfiction readers, writers, and lovers. I am your usual mod, Enthusiasm Girl, here for the intro, even though I'm not modding the episode that you're about to hear. That's right, it is finally time for Joan to step into the spotlight as the mod. Joan is going to occasionally take over from me as mod, I've said that before, and that's so that I can better cover those topics that I'm not as familiar with on the show, and it also helps me with the workload. So thank you so much to her for that. And the first episode that she really wanted to take on was one that's actually also been highly requested by listeners, and that is fan fiction within anime fandoms. And Joan is joined by Lita and Z, and they talk about the ways in which fans interpret Japanese culture, as well as which anime fandoms have, you know, produced more or less fic and are more or less popular, and they get into why that is. I learned a lot, actually, listening to this, and so I hope that even if you also, like me, aren't an anime fan, you'll find it as interesting as I did. I'll be back at the end for the usual wrap-up, but for now, we will get to the conversation. Today, joining us for the anime and manga episode is Lita.
Hi.
And Z.
Hello.
Let's dive right in with the first question. How did you get into anime and manga? And what was the first series you remember getting into? And, you know, why? Let's go with Lita first.
So I got into anime and manga via a friend of mine who was into it when I was in high school in maybe 1998. Maybe it was around 97, 98. And I made a friend in school and I revealed to her that I was into fan fiction, in particularly slash fan fiction. And she said, "Oh, let me show you anime," basically. And she got me into it. And the first series I watched actually was Fushigi Yugi, which I think the official like English translation ones are called Mysterious Play, which is a story. It's a shoujo manga and anime about a girl who gets transported into a book. And there are various adventures. She's transported into a book. It's like this ancient China kind of setting. And there's magic and destiny and all that kind of stuff. And I really got into it because I was into some Western cartoon fandoms in the 90s, like Batman the Animated Series and The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest. And it was kind of a revelation to me to watch a cartoon that was not aimed at children entirely, and where there was a like a continuous storyline from episode to episode. Because back then in the 90s, most TV shows, period, were very episodic. We didn't have these like long-running arcs like we do on pretty much everything nowadays. So it was really interesting to me to watch a show like that in the first place. And also because I was into slash fanfic, it was also interesting to me to learn that like Shonen Ai and stuff like that was actually a publishable canon storylines in Japan. Which it really was not in the 90s in the US. So it's still not I wouldn't call it like mainstream Japanese anime, but it certainly has existed since then as a thing. You could go to a bookstore and buy, you know, explicit slash manga, basically.
I remember finding that in middle school. So yeah, it's, it's come around.
It's been around a long time.
Oh yeah. Z, how about you? How'd you get into anime and manga?
You know, honestly, I can't remember when I started watching anime. Like, I know that it was in middle schoolish area, so like we're talking like 2002-ish area. And who is now my best friend, she was the one who got me into all of it. Fan fiction, anime, manga, all of it. Like, she's responsible for half of my life now.
And, sounds like a good friend.
She's an excellent friend, but
there's no friendship like dragging each other into the screaming hell pits of fandom.
Exactly. Yeah, she was the reason I wrote my first fan fiction and everything. And I do know that the first fan fiction I ever wrote was Yu-Gi-Oh. So I'm going to assume that's kind of where I started with anime. I remember watching Yu-Gi-Oh. I watched Inuyasha, Naruto, you know, the things that were big then. But Yu-Gi-Oh was definitely the one I remember the most. And I think I started with, I want to say my cousin bought me a volume of the Yu-Gi-Oh manga, which was where I began. And I got to the point where I had like multiple series. I had Dean Angel, I had Black Cat, I had Kamui, which never got big, which made me sad because I wanted fanfiction for that thing so bad. Yeah, I mean, I Death Note, I got big into that when I was in high school. I got big into Bleach. I had the Bleach DVDs for quite a while and things like that. But yeah, so I actually just had a revelation, actually.
Yeah.
My first anime was Gundam Wing. I remember it. Yay, because they played it during morning cartoons on Saturday. So like while I was watching things like X-Men and Spider-Man, all of a sudden there'd be Gundam Wing. It was like I was like, I want to say I was 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to me because, like, I mean, obviously I'm older than you guys are, but yeah. It's weird to me because I remember Gundam Wing was one of like the big new things when I first got into anime in the late 90s. And it was like, it wasn't on TV yet when I first got into it. I had to get it on fan subbed VHS tapes. Which I still own. I have all of Gundam Wing on fan-subbed VHS tapes in my closet upstairs. I don't have a VCR, but I still have these. And then, like, it was so weird that it started. When I was into it was kind of right when anime started to become a thing. Like, here in the U.S., they started translating it and dubbing and airing. And, you know, like, Princess Mononoke was, like, the first big like anime movie that got released in the US and stuff like that. So it's interesting to me because I remember I was in fandom. I was into that like a whole lot until I went to college and got busy with life. And I was kind of out of it for a while. But I remember Yu-Gi-Oh being like one of the very newest things. That was like one of the last things I read a fanfic for. I didn't ever see it or read it or anything, but I did read a fanfic for it.
Oh.
Like right in the around, you know, 2000 time period. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of interesting to see that that like you guys grew up with, like Gundam Wing being on Saturday morning cartoons. And I don't know, maybe, you know, something, I don't know, like, I don't even know which ones were Japanese, like Voltron or Transformers or something. Like those were the only kinds of like anime stuff that was cartoons when I was a kid.
I'm just really curious, where did you read that Yu-Gi-Oh fanfic in 2000?
Oh god, back then fanfic was only hosted on the author's individual websites.
Yeah,
pretty much. This was like pre-fanfiction.net, and there was an author whose fanfic I liked, and so I read at that time, because it was hard to get your hands on anime, because you had to like mail a check to somebody to send you a VHS tape. So I read fanfic for stuff that I never saw. Like I read a ton of Yu Yu Hakusho fanfic, and I saw maybe 8 episodes of it. But it was an author I liked who's, I think probably I was reading her Gundam Wing fanfic, and she started writing it. So I'm like, cool. Oh, what is this? New fic from this author I like. I'll read it. I don't know what it's about, but okay.
Okay, what's cool. This? Don't care.
Yeah. Well, back then also, because people knew that you couldn't get your hands on it, they would include like a preface that was like, here's what you need to know about this show in order to read my fanfic.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's pretty cool. And I also have to retcon myself because my first official anime was definitely Sailor Moon. I remember going over to my friend's house next door across the street. She lived just right across from me. I would go over to her house to watch it because my parents didn't believe in paying for cable. So I could never watch. I could never watch Sailor Moon, but I could watch it at my friend's house, and I could rent the same Sailor Moon VCR and watch the same 4 episodes over and over and over again. No, 8 episodes, because the VCR store had 2 Sailor Moon tapes. So I got to watch like one part where they were still just fighting random monsters, and then another part later on in the series, I'm sure, with Jedidite, and like right smack dab in the middle of his redemption arc or whatever, because I very distinctly remember one of the non-sailor sailors getting kidnapped by him, and then she had this whole conversation with him about, do aliens have holidays or something? So there was that, and I never read fic for Sailor Moon.
I only ever read one Sailor, I never watched Sailor Moon, but I read one Sailor Moon fanfic because it was at the time known as the worst piece of fanfiction ever written. This is before My Immortal existed.
Yes, oh my gosh, yes.
And it was a self-insert fanfic about the self-insert character having sex with the cat from Sailor Moon.
Oh my god.
What's the cat's name? Artemis or something like that? There was a cat.
Oh gosh.
Like I said, I didn't watch Sailor Moon, but I remember this terrible fanfic that was known as the worst fanfic.
So, wow.
There ends my knowledge of Sailor Moon fandom right there.
The first fan fiction I ever got into, because this is going to sound really bad for people who understand, but after Sailor Moon, my most reliable anime hookup was 4Kids. Because I know, I watched the One Piece dub.
I actually never watched One Piece at all.
don't watch the 4Kids dub. Just don't. But
4Kids butchers things so bad. Oh my god. You look at Yu-Gi-Oh! Like you read the manga for Yu-Gi-Oh! And people are dying, people's heads are exploding.
Yami sets people on fire.
He does, it's so bad. And then you watch the 4Kids version and it's like, oh my god, they're talking about friendship every 20 seconds, it's horrible.
After Sailor Moon, my most reliable anime hookup was 4Kids, as sad as that is. So I ended up watching Shaman King and One Piece Tokyo Mew. I know.
You're taking me back. Oh my god, I loved Shaman King.
It was so good. But we have to focus.
I'm sorry.
So those three, and then through them, I recognized a picture of one of the Shaman King characters on this girl in choir. She was sitting next to me, and I recognized a picture on her folder of one of the Shaman King characters, and then I struck up a conversation with her, and eventually, a couple years, no, the next year, we discovered fan fiction, and we ended up reading tons of Naruto fan fiction, just bucket loads, oceans of Naruto fan fiction. So that was my big introduction to anime and manga, and we just plunged right in there. Naruto, Bleach, Fruits Basket, just all of those. So that was how I got into anime and how I got into fan fiction. So there were like some things in anime and manga fan fiction that I sort of came to expect that when you go into other fandoms aren't exactly there, like the suffixes, for example.
Yes.
Which kind of brings us to question two, which is, you know, because anime and manga is written and produced in another language, there's a barrier for audiences outside of Japan, specifically the Western English speakers. In the past, there have been strong opinions on how these differences, both linguistic and cultural, should be handled. And these debates continue on today. So to keep this focused on fan fiction, let's talk about how that manifested in fic and how you saw that happening, that cultural divide happening in fic. Or did you see that? Let's start with Z.
Well, it for me, honestly, it calls to mind the whole, like, the British English versus American English debate that's happened before, like, as far as people writing, like, Harry Potter fanfiction and things like that. You see people using, like, different the British spellings and things, And so when I see anime fan fiction, you see people using like the san and the kun and the dono and the, you know, the suffixes that they don't really understand the meaning of, but they see it in other fan fiction or they hear it in the show or whatever, and so they just apply it. And so I saw a lot of wrong usage of it, which at the time I didn't really know, but I actually took a couple years of Japanese in college, so I sort of understand it now. And the people that use it needlessly are the ones that bothered me. But at the same time, it's kind of, it's interesting too, because you get the people who understand it and who know what it means and stuff, and so you get some really cool stories out of it. And actually one of my Rex later sort of ties into that one, where she uses the suffixes and whatnot and the terms, and she's really researched it and paid attention to it, and so it makes for interesting reading, in my opinion.
Lita, did the cultural divide impact your fic experience at all?
Yeah, I mean, I also took Japanese in college because of being into anime. Yeah, so I also took Japanese in college partially because I wanted to understand better, like, what was actually going on in anime and manga. And I was also listening to, like, Japanese rock music and stuff like that and trying to understand the language, which is a whole nother fandom, which I could talk about. But I think I talked about that on the RPF episode. I feel like I definitely used a lot of terms that I didn't know the real right way to use them writing fanfic back in the day. But I also feel like you can't just not do it. Yeah. Like some stuff, it's like needless, like ending a sentence with nay. Like it's like, okay, yes, you don't need to write that into your fanfic. That's totally irrelevant in the fanfic. But the suffixes and like honorifics can actually be like a character trait of how a character interacts with other characters. Yeah. So like for my, you know, favorite fandom, Tokyo Babylon, which is ancient, the main characters, Subaru and Seishiro, they always call each other Subaru-kun and Seishiro-san. Like always, all the time, no matter what the context is. And so if you leave that out in your fanfic entirely, then it's just, it just feels weird. And if you leave it out in specific places and put it in other places, then it can be very meaningful in terms of like generating the emotion of the scene in the fanfic. So I feel like you can't just like leave that stuff out entirely, because it's very relevant to the character interactions.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And it's, for me at least, sorry, but for me, it's, I agree with you completely, because the example that comes to my mind is Kenshin from Rurouni Kenshin. I mean, he used very, very formal speech whenever he spoke to people, because he believed himself to be so unworthy. And so he would use the suffixes like san and dono and things like that for others. And, you know, I've read stories where he doesn't use those, and it just feels odd.
Yeah.
And at the same time, though, using it with characters like, I saw a fanfic one time where somebody had Ichigo from Bleach using those kind of honorifics and stuff, and I was like, no, Ichigo does not speak like that. So it's what I meant was more people injecting those sorts of things into fandoms where they don't belong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just to sort of, in case people who are listening because they don't know about anime and manga, in Japanese, people have suffixes and address other people with suffixes based on familiarity and how they and their status. So like san is sort of an informal, and sama is really formal, whereas kun is more something you'd have with friends. So to change a suffix or to use a suffix or to not use a suffix is all very actual, you know, can be really important character information to tell you how these characters are interacting in a way that English doesn't support, but is actually really important to a lot of Japanese media, because it's part of their culture. So of course it would be.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, and I've seen that as well, you know, a huge debate over, well, not really a debate, but like, people applying it or misapplying the suffixes, as well as the random phrases in Japanese.
The random phrases, it's like, you know, the term like weeaboo,
Yes. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
So it's, that term didn't exist yet in the 90s because there weren't enough people who were into anime for it to be a thing. But I feel like that is something that nowadays, if you saw somebody who was like arbitrarily sticking miscellaneous Japanese into their speech without really knowing what they're doing, and especially if it's a white person, that definitely, like, that's like the definition of weeaboo pretty much.
Yeah.
And I totally did that when I was a teenager, just, you know, to come clean. But I know better now.
Yes, definitely. Same. Like, you just get so excited you know this thing and how, you know, theoretically how, and I think that's how you get random phrases like, watashi wa name here, you know, like, yeah. Characters introducing themselves and other really easy phrases.
Mm-hmm. Or like, daijobu. I saw that one used a ton. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Kawaii. Always. Yeah, you're kawaii. So kawaii. It's like, okay. You didn't need to put that in Japanese in your fanfic. You could have just said cute.
Yeah. You know, it's not like cute doesn't exist in English. Unlike a different word such as, crap, I need to edit this out, but I forgot. The word.
There are plenty of words comrade, in Japanese that don't exist
the
English.
Comrade, nakama. Nakama.
Nakama, like, yeah.
Nakama has, you know, there are more relevant debates over the word nakama as opposed to, you know, some other, you know, words because of, you know, the intense close bonds it represents.
I think that's also kind of like, it depends, for a person writing fanfic, it probably depends whether you watched something in a sub or a dub. Because I feel like if you watched a dub where they don't use honorifics or any, like, other Japanese language, then you clearly are not going to write it into your fanfic because you were not, it was not in the canon for you as a dub watcher. But then if you watch the sub and you're used to it being that way, then it feels weird for it to not be there, you know? And also like, the other thing I was thinking about related to this question is like the things that don't translate directly, especially jokes and puns that are in anime. Like, nowadays, I feel like what they try to do is come up with, like, an equivalent English pun that they'll put into a subtitle or in a dub. But in the back in the days of fan subs, I sound like a grandma, right? Like, back in my day, back in the days of fan subs, subbers used to do is they would write the literal translation, and then there would be, like, half of the rest of the screen would be covered with notes explaining what the actual joke was, so that you'd have to like pause so you could read about why this was supposed to be funny. So you like totally miss the joke, but then you read and you're like, oh, okay, I get it. These words sound the same and are written with this character in Japanese. Mm-hmm. Therefore, this is a pun, which I totally wouldn't have gotten. Yeah. And it's kind of like a toss up. It's like on the one hand, you feel like you understand better what the source material was when you know all those details, but you don't get the joke.
Well, yeah. There's more effort put into understanding it, as opposed to just being able to understand the joke.
Mm-hmm. Naruto is a really good example of this sort of issue here, because the believe it phrase that Naruto uses all the time.
Oh, yeah.
They made that up to replace him saying Databayo, which that doesn't really have a translation in English. And so they just sort of had him spouting this random thing. And I mean, it happened with all three of the main characters. Sasuke had the Ursura Tonkatsu thing, and I mean, it doesn't really have a meaning in English, so they just, you know, had him call him idiot and things like that, and you lost a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then this goes into the dub and sub issue, because then you get people who have seen the English dubbed episodes, and they might do anything from use believe it versus Databayo to using completely different names for the characters, such as a big one that jumps into my mind because I'm so familiar with it is Detective Conan, also known as Case Closed, because they've got two different titles in English versus Japanese. and the characters are all, you know, the girl's name is Ran, but she's called Rachel in the dub, and the main character's his name is Shinichi, but they changed it to Jimmy in the dub.
I feel like the dubs of, I mean, at least of some shows, I feel like the dubs try to, they used to, they probably don't anymore, but the dubs back in the day, the dubs were kind of like the dumbed down version because they were putting it like for kids. So I would expect that the dubbed Gundam Wing that was in your Saturday morning cartoons probably was quite different than the subbed Gundam Wing that I watched in terms of just like general content and stuff like that. Like, and some things I remember hearing about. I remember hearing, like I said, I never watched Sailor Moon, but I remember hearing that when they dubbed it into English, they turned like a lesbian relationship into like, they're just really good friends and cousins or something like that.
Yeah, they did that. Yeah.
The relationship between
or like change the genders of characters or like just because they like tried to make, when anime started becoming a mainstream in the US, they tried to make it for kids. Mm-hmm. I think. And so they try to, like, you know, yeah, sanitize.
Yeah.
Well, the names, definitely. Especially in Sailor Moon, I mean, the main character is Usagi, and in the dub version, at least the old dub version, her name was Serena. They're redoing Sailor Moon now, the Sailor Moon Crystal series, and it's actually quite excellent, and they didn't rename them in the dub version, which is fantastic in my opinion.
Yeah, I think after 2000, like the early 2000s, they stopped changing the names in the dub, I think, which I think is a big step forward, because I know that in the 4Kids era, the big thing, oh my gosh, the big thing was localization, they called it, where they would take things like, you know, foods and try and pretend that they're cheeseburgers or donuts.
Pokemon was very guilty of that.
Yep. And that's, I'm convinced that my 4Kids experience, you know, when I didn't know any better, it was okay. But now that I, you know, but then I heard then I got to watch the anime, the original Japanese with subtitles. And then I realized that, oh my gosh, there's like actual feeling in this. And I've never gone back. I don't like dubs anymore. I just can't watch them. And I'm convinced that 4Kids scarred me for life.
I think it's also at some point the translation companies started realizing that not all anime is for children, and they started marketing it more appropriately and, you know, doing more accurate translations and stuff like that.
Well, I think anime like Attack on Titan comes around like in that kind of thing, because that is, there's no way where that could be anything but an adult show. But
seriously.
Or like Yuri on Ice, right, which is huge right now. It's I watched one episode of the dub because I was curious, because someone told me the voices were hilarious, and they are hilarious.
They are hilarious.
It's certainly not like sanitized or anything the way that dubs used to be. It's pretty much just the same thing. Just it's still localized because, you know, the stuff like puns that need to be changed in order to make sense in English, stuff like that. But
but it's not calling an onigiri a donut.
Something like that. See, I have a love-hate relationship with dubs, because I find actors, voice actors that I really like Vic Mignogna and Johnny Yung Bosch, and, you know, it's so I follow them, and if they're in a show, 9 times out of 10, I'll watch it in English, because I like those actors so much. I mean, so things like Fullmetal Alchemist or Bleach or Code Geass, I watch all of those in the dub because I enjoy the actors.
You know, I tend not to watch dubs, partly because, you know, I'm probably scarred for life from 4Kids, but also just because I just find that your average American company is probably not as invested in doing good dubs, because I've watched some stuff in German, and let me tell you, German Star Wars is amazing. Like, there's just the way the actors can lip sync with the characters, you know, the English voices are saying, and like once you sort of see a dub where people actually put in effort, like in a consistent way, that it's kind of hard to sort of look at a lot, like not all. I really do like Mob Psycho 100. They have a really good actor for Mob, but I feel like there's a lot of maybe not laziness, but just like sloppy conventions of voice acting that really affect my enjoyment of the show.
Yeah, like the reason that I started out with subs and I kind of stuck with subs ever since, because like when people first started airing dub stuff on TV, they put a lot of effort into like matching the mouth like patterns of like how wide a mouth was moving. Mm-hmm. And the rhythm of speaking Japanese is very different than in English. Mm-hmm. So the dubs mm-hmm. just sounded very strange and awkward because the voice actor was trying to match this rhythm of the mouth with a sentence that just did not have that rhythm at all. Yeah. So everything just sounded very strange and unnatural. And I think mm-hmm. they do a lot better at that now than they used to. But because that was my first exposure to dubs was that kind of thing, I've never been able to really watch them.
Yeah.
I've been able to look past it. And like I said, though, I think it is a lot of it is my love for the actors. But certain companies, I think, do better than others. Like Funimation, in my opinion, is fantastic. Like I haven't found many problems. I've found some issues with their dubs, but I mean, for as a general rule, I quite enjoy Funimation's dubs.
We don't mean to demonize dubs. It's just that a few of us have had bad experiences with previous dubs, and you know, it's just our preference. So
I mean, and dubs are you know, critical for anybody who, you know, can't read the screen fast enough to read a subtitle, or exactly. you know, is visually impaired or has dyslexia, or for whatever reason that you can't watch a subtitle, it's, you know, you still want to be able to watch the content.
And there are definitely merits to localizing some things, because literally translating certain aspects of what the characters are saying, which a lot of subtitles do, might not actually give you the full impact, because you have to have a heck of a lot of back knowledge about what's going on, or Japanese culture or things like that. Whereas a good dub, you can just watch it and know. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely a benefit that subs tend not to have.
Yeah.
With saying that, Let's wrench ourselves back to Fit and go on to question 4, which is, what are some things you've seen in anime manga fic that you don't see elsewhere? And are these differences structural to the fic? Are they just sort of weird language quirks? Are they vocab people don't use, or like writing habits or conventions or whatever? Anything you can think of.
I think there's like, I mean, we already talked about adding, you know, miscellaneous Japanese words to fanfics. And the other thing I've seen sometimes is writing out the kind of like exaggerated visual jokes that you see in anime, like somebody getting mm-hmm. a giant nosebleed, or like rivers of tears pouring out of their eyes, or that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like people will describe that in a fanfic, and you as the reader are expected to imagine that as the, like, you know, visual
that
it is. Yeah. And yeah. Whereas if it was not an anime, that would just make no sense. You'd be like, why are they having a nosebleed? I don't get mm-hmm. it. Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've seen, which can be good or bad, is fanfic that reads, where the dialogue reads like translated Japanese. And actually, the fic I'm going to rec later does have this kind of dialogue, where if you've consumed the source material in a way that was a direct translation, then if the fanfic also reads like that, then it feels very in character. But if you haven't consumed it in that way, then you look at like a sentence and you're like, this is a really awkward sentence in English. Like, nobody would say that. Nobody would use the person's name. Like, instead of saying, for this fic I was writing, because I wrote a Yuri on Ice fic mm-hmm. like last week or something like that, I wrote this sentence and it said, there are no naked pictures of Katsuki Yuri on the internet. And then I realized, yeah, that's totally what this person would say in Japanese, but they're talking to him. And in English, we don't use someone's name when we're talking directly to them. In a sentence, we'd say like, there are no naked pictures of you on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was thinking about it from the sub, and I was thinking about it because I took Japanese in college, and I'm like, okay, this is totally what he'd say. And then I'm like, that's what he would say if it was in Japanese, but it's not in Japanese. This is in English. So,
yeah.
So I'm just going to change the sentence so that it doesn't sound so awkward, but it's one of those things I've seen, like dialogue that sounds like translated Japanese.
I've seen a few of those things too. I feel like I didn't notice that as much because at the time where I was really big into anime stuff and reading anime fic, I'm pretty sure I did the same thing. So I think it kind of flew right over my head, but, one interesting thing, and like you brought it up, Lita, the whole fact that you see people, using this sort of language and whatnot and the cultural things, and I see that kind of stuff sort of trying to cross over into other stories. Like, I'll find myself reading, like, I don't know, an Avengers story or something, and I'll see them trying to describe what's happening, and they're being over-exaggerating, and, like, they're talking about, oh, rivers of tears and stuff, and I'm thinking, you're talking about a fandom that's not, it doesn't, this doesn't mesh. I've actually seen that happen, and you know, in anime fic, it kind of works because you're coming from the source material where that's the sort of stuff that happens in the show, and so it works for me. But it's funny to me that people have tried to drag that over into other places. I think they feel like it's, if I describe it more, it'll make it more visual. Yeah. No, now you're just making it awkward.
Yeah.
Definitely, some of the things that I've noticed are vocabulary, the way Eastern and Western fandoms sort of describe things, because like in the West you have slash, in the East you've got yaoi or yuri or shonen or shoujo ai. That's definitely one of the big differences I've seen in fic, that in anime, you know, anime manga specific fic, that I haven't seen in Western fandom, because there are terms in Japanese that don't exist.
That's actually, that's actually an interesting, like, fandom history point, too, because, like, I don't know if you guys remember back in the day when we used to call explicit fanfic that was for an animated series lemons?
Yes. Lemons and limes. So, like,
yeah, but you would never call, like, an Avengers fanfic a lemon. Like,
I've seen that happen, actually.
Well, I guess, but it wasn't, like, the normal
sort of
term.
Old.
Right? Like, you call it slash, and you call it, like, a slash explicit or a slash NC-17 instead of, like, yaoi lemon. So it's just another fandom, like, split divide between, like, anime fandoms. And it expanded from anime fandom to include, like, Western cartoon fandoms. You would also see yaoi lemon applied to, like, Johnny Quest in the 90s or, you know, other things.
Yeah. And I'm not really familiar with a lot of them, because I think a lot of them have to do with, like, just like smut things. And I don't read smut very much I don't read smut because I don't like it. So, like, I see, if you go through a kink meme or something, like, you're looking for all the gen prompts.
You find all the Japanese kinks in there.
Yes. And you find them, like, I didn't want to know what that was, but I do now. It's like, okay, let me just continue on with my life, please. Yep. This is not something I'm interested in. Thank you for the knowledge. No, thank you, but I'll just keep
accidental
going.
Wikipedia lesson in Japanese rope bondage or something like that.
Yes, yep. It's like, there's so many naked men on the internet.
And a lot of them are from anime.
Yes. So, question 5. Anime and manga can be hard to talk about as its own genre, since there are actually many genres within anime and manga, starting with the shonen shoujo divide. So let's sort of get into that a little bit more, and we could talk about that and sort of what are your favorite genres? Or actually, let me talk about shonen versus shoujo, and then we can sort of dive down those rabbit holes.
I was gonna say, so, we might want to define those.
Yeah. So, unlike Western comics that are mostly about superheroes these days, anime and manga, and I'm just going to say manga right now, have tons and tons and tons of different genres. And we're going to, and just to sort of, on a baseline, there's shonen and shoujo. And shonen means boy, and shoujo means girl. So there are, you know, there's boy manga and girl manga. And under these different umbrellas, there are still tons of different genres. So you can have superheroes or magical girls or detective stories or love stories or just so many different kinds of genres. Like anything you can think of, there's a manga for that. There's an anime of that. It's true. So like you might go into manga just thinking, oh, it's just comics, there's going to be superheroes. No, there's like a lot of slice of life stuff or detective stuff or magical girls or horror or, you know, any kind of genre.
High school teen drama.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Yes. So many of those.
The one that comes to mind is Oron High School Host Club.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
The one that comes to mind to me, because I'm ancient apparently, is Marmalade Boy. Do you guys ever hear of Marmalade Boy?
I've never heard of Marmalade Boy.
Is this like extremely long anime and manga that's just about a girl who, her parents like go on a cruise and meet this other couple and they decide to switch partners. So her mom and like the other, they exchange partners and the other couple has a son who's like her age and they all move into a house together. And then it's basically like the on again, off again love story between her and this boy who's now her like stepbrother. And it's very like typical, like high school drama. There's like the other girl who has a thing for the teacher. And then there's like, the guy thinks, well, what if his friend thinks he might be adopted, and was he really adopted? And then they have this section where for a hot second, they think they might actually be siblings, and they're like, oh crap. Oh no. What if we're really related? This is terrible. And then it turns out they're not.
Okay.
It's very, very like typical of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's also great, by the way. I love it.
Okay.
But
yeah, like there's just tons and tons and tons of different genres. So you're not restricted. Like just if you haven't tried anime or manga, there's an anime or manga for you.
Pretty much.
Sort of thing. Pretty much, because there's just so many. So let's just talk about our favorite genres and maybe there are differences between anime and manga genres that you don't see in Western genres, or maybe not. Let's find out. Let's talk to whoever wants to talk first.
I actually, in researching for this episode, I found something interesting because I was looking at genres and stuff and trying to figure out, like, where my interests fell. And funnily enough for me, I actually tend to lean more towards shonen stuff. So things that are typically targeted towards boys or men, those are the kind of anime and manga I like to see. Things like Fullmetal Alchemist or Code Geass or Trigun or, you know, things that are considered more manly, whereas I mean, I do enjoy the occasional shoujo thing, but still, for the most part, I lean towards the shonen and, like, the fantasy stuff. I really enjoy fantasy. Sci-fi, fantasy, I don't know which side of that Fullmetal Alchemist falls on. Because FMA, just to throw it out there, that's probably my favorite anime series of all time. Probably my favorite manga series.
It's so good.
It's fantastic. I love that series.
Good. Fullmetal Alchemist dances between sci-fi and fantasy and laughs at both of them in a really good way.
Yes, it does. It's a fantastic show.
I also am really partial to the shonen genres, and I think that's partially because I just really don't like romance, and shonen manga tends to have less, if sometimes no romance.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, in order to avoid romance, I can just stick to shonen and get all my adventures and dragons and punching people in the face without worrying about romantic subplots. I do like a couple of shoujo things. Like I mentioned Fruits Basket before, and that's just a really nostalgic series for me. It is, and the premise is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, and I'm partial to people turning into animals and stuff, and there are 12 of those people in
I actually, somewhere, I have a pair of stretch pants that say I love Kyo on the butt.
Does it have a little orange cat on it?
Yes, it does, on the hip.
Oh, yes! Oh, he was good. I was sad that the fandom never did anything about the cursed cat form, because I mm-hmm. thought that would have been really interesting. Like,
yes, it would have.
Like, the first time you see blood in that series, it's because of that form. And I'm just thinking, you know, it'd be really useful if he were, like, in a big fight or if he had to defend Toru or something.
Something big and dramatic, but that's not Shoujo's way. That's more shonen.
It's not a non-magical girl shoujo way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because yeah. I think, wouldn't Madoka be mm-hmm. considered a shoujo, or is it more of a Madoka? Shonen?
Oh my gosh, that's really, really hard, because there are huge debates over, like, the creator has said some stuff, and the way it was created is kind of, like, feeds into a lot of, let's call the pre-existing fetishes.
Do you know who published it? Because usually you could tell, because there's, like, you know, if it was published by Shonen Jump, then yeah, it's a shonen manga.
I don't remember at all, but, like, the guy said, you know, like, evil is, like, he said some really unkind things about young girls, and it's like, how, I mean, people do write for audiences that they hate, but it's just hard to, you know, it's kind of hard to see because it is very fighty.
Yeah.
It's extremely action-based, but it is technically a magical girl anime, so it's kind of...
Yeah, so I'm gonna tentatively put it in the shoujo magical girl category, and if anybody wants to come and debate me about that, I'd actually love to hear their thoughts about it, because Madoka sits at that really... really awkward point, you know, really awkward culture clash, because for the Japanese side, and magical girls in general too, because, like, the Japanese side, embracing femininity is not actually very feminist for Japanese women, according to things I've read from them. Whereas on the Western side, like, that sort of girl power thing is something that we've been trying, you know, like the whole putting down of the female gender. It's like, you know, there, nothing good comes from being a girl sort of thing. Whereas you get frilly magical girls are like, girl power, you know, it just looks like just pure girl power, which is really cool for people in the West, you know, girls in the West. And, Madoka is a dark take on that. Mm-hmm. So it can, you know, so it can be hard to decode in that way.
I feel like the most popular anime are the ones that kind of bridge the gap between shoujo and shonen, like Kenshin, right? You mentioned Kenshin. Yes. Before, it was a shonen manga, but it certainly is very popular with women too. And, you know, in the US at least, is it shonen because it's set in history and there are sword fights? Because, like, I feel like the character interactions is something that generally you think of as, like, shoujo. Like, is there romance? Mm-hmm. Is there really compelling, like, friendships and stuff like that, as opposed to just the action part of it?
Mm-hmm.
Or like Gundam Wing, which we mentioned also, that's also a shonen story, but it was extremely popular with women. It was super popular with fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got, like, these five guys who have this, like, intense relationships with each other.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're all attractive, so that doesn't hurt.
Not at all.
Or like Evangelion, right? Bring it back around. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of these things where it's like, there's a giant robot, therefore it's shonen, maybe, but maybe not. I mean, for me, I think, like, my favorite genres are kind of like the shoujo fantasy genres, which is almost the same as the shonen ones, except maybe with a little more, like, female main characters and like relationship drama. So like I mentioned Fushigi Yugi before. Escaflowne is another good one.
Escaflowne is nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's also got a giant robot, right? Sort of. Yeah. But it's definitely a shoujo story. I mean, it's about a girl and she gets transported and she has some like destiny. I guess that's kind of like, that's the genre I like. Girl gets magically transported to fantasy world where she must fulfill her destiny, right?
Have you heard of the 12 Kingdoms?
I think I might have heard the name, but I have not really.
It's on Netflix.
Is that something I should look for?
Yes, you should. If you like that, that's like literally that trope, but taken to like up to 11 and apparently really awesome. It's on my to watch list. I keep not having time to watch it. I really should because I follow someone who's a real fan of it and looks really good.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix, isn't it?
I feel like the other thing I mentioned Clamp before. And Clamp being, for those who don't know, Clamp is a group of manga authors. I feel like they're kind of their own genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that genre. They're their own. All of their stuff has very similar characteristics and it's all not quite the same as everybody else's. And I've always loved it. And for people who don't know Clamp, the name, like probably know Cardcaptor Sakura, which is probably their most famous one.
Mm-hmm. They did that. They sure did that.
A lot of Clamp actually, it's a lot of their stuff is sort of one overarching universe if you really look at it.
Oh yeah.
Characters like Sakura from Cardcaptor Sakura. She's also in Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle and they make references to.
They put like everybody in Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle. I haven't read
it.
My favorite, like, OTP from Tokyo Babylon is also in it, so.
Yeah, I've got Triple X Holic, yeah. There. Yeah, I have that one on DVD, and they've got mentions of both Tsubasa and Cardcaptor in that show, and then Chobits is mentioned both of those shows again. Like, everything they have is overarching.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they sort of also, like, walk the line between shonen and shoujo, because a show, like,
they're pretty violent. I mean, like, as I mentioned to you guys before we started recording, the X-1999 manga never finished because it was too violent and it got pulled for being too violent. But it was in a shoujo, like, publication. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love Clamp. I love it because it's very, a lot of their stuff has these really, like, screwed up power dynamics, relationships between people. Which is, you know, my favorite kind of fanfic to read, too, where everything is kind of, like, everything is terrible and dubious, basically.
Yeah, just, they have such melancholy stuff. Like, I don't know about, I never finish any of their stuff, except I finished Chobits. But that was kind of weird. They have such melancholy settings, and melancholy stuff, like, I mean, Holic, like, if you think about it, Watanuki's situation is super messed up, and oh gosh, what's her name, the girl who's bad luck to be around. She's a sweetheart, but she's
utterly adorable.
Yeah, and she's just, like, she's just bearing this this curse that she's bad luck to be around very well.
Himawari.
Yes, Himawari. Right?
Yeah. I had to look it up.
She's such a sweet person and she's such a good person, but like literally being around her is bad luck. Like you get cut, you see dead body, like just is messed up, man.
And they also have a lot of stuff that like everything is messed up, but you maybe don't notice. Because there's like other stuff going on that's like cute.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't occur to you how messed up something is until there's like a reveal. There's like a pull the rug from under you reveal and you're like, oh crap, that's terrible.
Yeah.
So
Clint does
like,
that
I heard the ending of Holic was really, really sad and melancholy, but I haven't confirmed it for myself yet.
It is. I've seen it. It is.
Oh gosh, that's sad.
It actually kind of relates to like another topic that I don't know if you guys want to talk about.
Go ahead.
So before this episode, I was trying to like kind of prepare for it because I haven't been in a lot of anime fandom recently, as opposed to 20 years ago. So I was talking to a friend of mine who is currently in a bunch of anime fandoms, and she mentioned that anime fandom seems to skew kind of younger in terms of the fan base watching it, and that there seems to be a lot more like purity wank in anime fandom, where, you know, if you ship this ship, then you're bad, and, you know, especially when there's underage ships, because anime tends to be like, I feel like half the time it's about teenagers. It's
I think the age acknowledgement is really interesting, and I think they did talk about this in a previous episode, the one about age differences in fandom, the getting all over each other's lawns.
I know it's been a thing in Attack on Titan fandom of being a lot of debate about like who is okay to ship.
I'm absolutely sure that some of that comes from the fact that one of the most popular pairings, if it is still really popular, Eren and Levi is, he looks really young, but he's actually a fully grown adult man, and Eren is like 16, and the first time they met, Levi just beats the crap out of him. So
yeah,
that's kind of what he does.
Yeah, he does. Well, like, and I think this is one of the important parts, while Eren is not allowed, like, socially or physically to defend himself. So, I'm definitely sure that's where a lot of that came from. And,
yeah, it's also more common, like, in anime and Japanese media to have age gap relationships. Like in the canons, there's a lot of times there will be like teacher student relationship, or, you know, the classic yaoi trope of like the semi-uke, like the older guy and like the younger guy.
It's Loveless is a really good example of that.
Yeah,
because that's and that takes in the catboy genre too, but because there's the one character who's older, and I can't remember the character. It's been so long since I've seen Loveless, but he's a lot older. I'm going to look it up now because I have to know. And the other one is, like, I think he's 14 or 13 or something like that. And so it's, but that has a manga and an anime.
Yeah, and my favorite that I mentioned before, Tokyo Babylon, that's entirely about, like, a 16-year-old boy and like a 20-something guy who is basically preying on him for like the entire thing. Like the whole thing is their love story, where love is like in quotation marks because the older guy is also the villain of the story. But it's like really interesting to watch, but it's definitely something that is more acceptable in Japanese media than in Western media to show.
Yeah.
Ritsuka and Sobi, that's the names of the two characters from Loveless. And yeah, Ritsuka is 12 and Sobi is 20 in the series. So, I mean, it's quite, and that's like even super, like he's younger than I thought he was. So, but yeah, that's, I agree with Lita, like wholeheartedly, you don't see that kind of stuff in Western media at all.
No, you don't.
Or even in Marmalade Boy, there was the student in love with teacher that I mentioned, and like, they have a happy ending. Like she leaves school and goes and marries a teacher. Like it's, as I recall, and it's okay. That's like an okay thing to do.
Even in Fruits Basket, there was Toru's parents, where her mom ended up marrying her teacher, and those are her parents. It's like
stuff like that. It's like super sketchy, and it's super sketchy in Western society. But you know.
But yeah, so you get into sort of navigating that within fic and fandom, I'm sure, figuring out the relationships between these characters, because a lot of like fandom's first reaction to a strong relationship is always, you know, ship it romantically. There's also a lot of like heated rivalry in anime and manga.
You mean between characters?
Yeah, just like.
I feel like that's more so in shonen stuff.
Yeah, shonen has tons.
The super rivals. Yeah,
the tournament anime and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I think about rivals, I always think about Naruto and Sasuke because,
that's,
you know.
Yeah, like, that's one that comes to my mind, and this might be a little bit of a weird one, but I grew up with it, is Goku and Vegeta in Dragon Ball Z. I mean, yeah. Because they're always, Vegeta more so, because Goku doesn't give a crap, but Vegeta's always like, I am better, and, you know, so you have that massive rivalry going on between them.
Yeah, which I think, like, you do get sort of rivalries in Western media, but they're not as intense
yeah.
which is definitely something fandom capitalizes on, because, again, you know, intense relationship. They must be in love.
Well, they totally are, don't you know?
Well, or at least they can have hate sex, so, you know.
True.
Yeah.
That's always an option.
And it's always fun.
Let's do Ficrex now. Yeah, so, who wants to go first this week?
I guess I will.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
My first one is actually a Bleach fanfic, and it is Ichigo Toshiro, because I'm a huge fan of them. I still am, even though I don't read an anime very much anymore. It's by an author called Daipai. She used to be called Hikia, though. But for me, I picked this one because it's one of my favorites. It's one I still go back to periodically, even though it's from 2007 was the last time it was updated, so I still go back to it and read it periodically because it's very well written. She really integrates the Japanese terms and things from the show that you really hear in the sub as opposed to the dub into the story, and she uses them in a really smart way. She gets things, you know, plotted out and figured out, and it's just a really, really good read. And the other one is Infection by DXM Junkie, and it's a Death Note story, and it's essentially a retelling of Dawn of the Dead, which makes me super happy because I love zombie stuff, and so when I found this story, I was like, ooh, two of my favorite things together.
Cool.
It kind of has the same qualities of empathy, which made me want to really wreck it, because she also uses, or he or she, I'm sorry, this one also uses the Japanese terms and the Japanese names and things in a really smart way that doesn't detract from the story, and it's very well written. It's like epic length. It's 32 chapters, and the romance between L and Light is really slow evolving, and it's just a really well written story.
Cool. Lita, do you want to go?
Yeah, so I've got two. One is one that I have frequently called my favorite fanfic of all time. It's called Sakura and Snow, and it is by Natalie Bond. And it is in the X-1999 and Tokyo Babylon universe. It's Seishiro and Subaru. So if you're familiar with either of those fandoms, or possibly with other Clamp fandoms, you will know who these people are. And she started writing this in 1996 and finished it in 2009. So it goes canon divergent from the amount that had been published in 96. And it's... there's actually a fan lore page about it, which I just found, which says, Sakura and Snow is considered by many fans as one of the very few stories that managed to achieve the almost impossible task of bringing Seishiro and Subaru together in a relatively peaceful way without resorting to out of character. So it's basically like, I wouldn't call it a fix-it fic because it doesn't quite fix things, but it's a long kind of slow fic that's all about these two characters finding a way to live together with the fact that they know that they're mortal enemies who will have to kill each other in the end. And it's really great. It's the one I also mentioned. The dialogue reads like a translation of Japanese, but in this case, that makes it feel extremely tightly in character. So I just love it because it's like perfect characterization. And the other one that I have is also a Tokyo Babylon X Subaru and Seishiro fanfic called Nukume Dori by Lyrith. And this one started getting written in 2000 and is still updating. They have been writing this for 17 years now, and a new chapter comes out every maybe 3 months or so. And this one is a fix-it fic. So this one takes place after the end of X, which X, the official end, never got written, but it's after the theoretical end of X, where this is hard to explain without like explaining the whole canon material. The plot of X-1999 is that there's going to be an apocalypse and the world is going to end, and these two sides need to fight together to decide who wins and gets to decide what happens at the end of the world. So this fic takes place after the end of the world with an assumption about one group having won, and the result of them winning was getting a chance to do it all again. So basically turning back time, going back to the very beginning and replaying the entire thing, except for the difference that the character remembers the first history. So it's basically saying, like, the 16-year-old Subaru in this has the memory of being an adult and having had that ending where people kill each other and all this kind of horrible things. But now he gets a chance to do it again and see if he can change things. So it's definitely a fix-it fic. It's really good. It's really long. It's still updating. It's extremely good characterization. And the author put a lot of details about Japan into it. So it's extremely detailed about, like, places and street names and festivals and all that kind of stuff. Highly recommend it.
My rec is of Cold Hands Reaching by Uncanny Cookie, and it's for the anime Mob Psycho 100. But since Mob Psycho 100 is an anime and a manga, it's for something that happens in the manga that hasn't been in the anime yet. So if you've only watched the anime of Mob Psycho 100, and I really suggest you do, it's really good. It's really well animated, and Mob is a sweetheart. And so if you've only seen the Mob Psycho anime, you would not understand what's going on in this fic, because it happens after something really intense that happens in the manga. But so in the manga, this really intense thing happens, and it kind of the manga doesn't actually really address what happened, because the main character Mob, he's sort of trapped in this illusion world for 6 months, and that's kind of a long time. And so they sort of deal with this the fallout of how he would react after living through 6 illusionary months of all these really not cool things happening to him. And they do a really, really good job of it. Everybody's in character. Mob's voice in this is just spot on. This is one of the most in-character fics I've ever seen, especially for a character like Mob, who I think some people would have problems with. But this author just gets him spot on, and it's amazing. And I just love this fic to bits. It's completed and actually part of a series I need to catch up on the second fic of this series, which I haven't done. But oh my gosh, Of Cold Hands Reaching is amazing, and I love it. I'm also gonna rec Vegetacy Ascendant, which is a really, really, really old fic. It actually comes in 3 parts. The first 2 have been completed. The third one is a work in progress and probably will never be completed, considering that it's hosted on a GeoCities site and the links are actually breaking down. I had a moment of panic when, after about 8 months, I went back to try and reread this thing, and some of the links didn't work. I thought I'd lost the fic forever, but I didn't, and it's now safely stored on my computer because the world building on this is just really, really interesting. It posits a world where Vegeta went off planet and participated in this tournament, and he got beat up by Zarbon. And then he sort of demands that Zarbon come back and train him. And so all these huge, huge changes happen because of this. And it's really interesting. And the world building is amazing. And it also does the really embarrassing thing of smattering some random Japanese in there. So I think it's a pretty good example of older fic, I guess. So I really thought the world building was cool, which is why I'm wrecking it. And it's a really old anime fandom fic. So those are my fics for this episode.
So that is our show. Thanks again to Joan and to Lita and Z, and thanks to you for listening. If you liked what you heard, you can check out our website and our Tumblr at theotpodcast.com. You can also join us on Twitter, where we are at theotpodcast. I do know our Twitter has been a little dead lately, but we are working on that, and I apologize, so please follow us there. We will get it going a little more, hopefully soon. A very important announcement. So lately I have had listeners who've been wondering where the heck to send feedback about the show or talk about it. Not all of you are on Tumblr or Twitter to talk about it there. I did turn on the commenting on the website. I did used to also have the Dreamwidth and the option of leaving comments in AO3, but those fell out of use because I wanted to find a more centralized way to do it. So we have a forum now. A little outdated, but I think it'll be really great, a good place for everybody to chat about the show. I promise that it will now permanently be where you can go and leave feedback for us and let us know what you think of episodes. I've archived the old Dreamwidth questions that we had asked there, and in the future, any questions that we pose will also live there. There's an area for episode ideas as well, and it also allows us to do polls and all sorts of fun stuff in the future. So please go and register there and let us know what you think of the show or post a topic related to the episodes. We really appreciate all of your thoughts and feedback and support. And so I wanted to make sure we got a permanent home for people to go and keep these conversations going. And you can find it on our website, which again is theotpodcast.com. And it also has its own address, which is forum.theotpodcast.com. So we hope to see you there. And thanks always to Peter Chakowski for our theme song and our logo. And finally, your kink is not my kink, and that's okay.